Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Litecoin Underground podcast. So how do you like that intro music? You know, it's funny. I picked that randomly from like a no license playlist. Probably have been about 3 years ago, and it's kind of grown on me. I mean, there's obviously a reason I picked it. I don't know. Wondering if I should change it up. But hey, so this week we have Nathan Poulin from Mini Mines, is a mining company he's running in North Carolina. They do mining, and they also have, I wish I could tell you the details of it after this interview, but you know, a way that you can basically invest in the mining, and he'll get into some of the tax advantages and why it's beneficial and maybe a good time to be looking at something like this. So we talked a little bit about Litecoin mining, and of course they merge mine Dogecoin and Bell's coin, and sometimes even some I think he called them doo-doo coins. not the Digibyte's one of them. He does mention Digibyte. He's not talking about that. But, yeah, it's just good to get a perspective on what that industry's doing. And he talks a little bit about kind of his migration from being a Bitcoiner to a Litecoiner. You know, a similar path we've probably all followed of understanding that if it's all going to be here, then Litecoin's the next big thing. And, of course, this week, again, we're going to bring up Cake Wallet, sponsor and official wallet of the Litecoin Underground podcast. Those guys are continuing to build and innovate, and I just expect them to grow and grow. All I hear are good things, and almost everybody that I seem to come across is already a customer. So we're going to do an episode with them soon, and we'll probably learn a little more about the MWeb implementation and some of the other things you can do on the wallet. So it's a great privacy wallet. You can hold Bitcoin, Litecoin, Monero, and probably about 10 other assets. You can swap in between the assets within the wallet. And the whole time, it's your keys, your coins, right? You never have to trust a third party. So thanks for the support, guys. As always, I appreciate it and enjoy the show. All right. Hey, everyone. Here we are on Litecoin's 13th birthday. We didn't plan this to be the day we were going to do this interview, but it worked out well. So happy birthday, Litecoin. Today, we're going to be talking to Nathan Poulin from Mini Mines, who he didn't put his et in his name, but his et is LTC Cowboy or Litecoin Cowboy, just spelled out. So go follow him if you want to learn more about what we talk about. But essentially, what Nathan has is a mining company, and we're just going to talk about not only Litecoin mining, but obviously the script mining, and just maybe the business, the economics of what it is to be a miner. So, Nathan, nice to have you in. You know, the thing about miners, I mined for a little bit, like right over here. I just decided to try to do a home rig, and me and my buddies threw some cash in. This is in 2018, worst time to do it, right? and I think I set up 15 or 16 machines, and it was an undertaking. It was eye-opening, but I never liked having to say I've got 16 miners in my basement, because I thought that sounded really that's one thing. Should they change the name of it? Because saying you have a miner is like that, you gotta spell it out, right?
Yeah. I do also sometimes feel awkward when people say, "What do you do?" I'm like, "Well, I'm a miner." Like, how do you? No. What do you do? You look a lot older than 17.
They are like, you're down mining for coal, like back in the, like a cartoon era character or something like that. Well, so tell me a little bit like what Mini Mines is kind of on the surface and what you guys do. And then maybe we'll dive into kind of what the act of mining, how mining is and the business of it right now.
Sure. So we are a Litecoin mine that takes investments from accredited investors that are looking for passive investments, and we deploy it all into the script algorithm. So we take our money and other people's money, and we mine Litecoin with it.
So how many miners do you guys have?
We have something like 180 L7s.
Oh, geez. Okay.
depending on the day and how many need repairs, right? But so something about 180 L7s Litecoin miners.
Okay, cool. And so, yeah, you're primarily, when you say you're a Litecoin mining facility, that means all your assets, everything you mine, you settle into Litecoin. Even so, if you're mining Dogecoin and Bellcoin, and maybe even do you ever get into other machines? You know, like Kaz, I know, is a big one that came up. Do you diversify, or are you guys pretty much sticking to the script?
Yeah. So early on, when we first got into mining, I didn't really know what algorithm. We just focused on what we thought to be US dollar ROI, right? So we have, I don't know, maybe 40 GPUs on a handful of rigs. And we've got some Kadena miners and Handshake miners and Eagle Song. And we've got a decent amount of Bitcoin miners, but all of those right now are not profitable to mine in, or at least not of any substance. And so, you know, they might be break even or close to it. And so they're all unplugged. And so right now we're running exclusively Litecoin. When the market does whatever it might do, we'll probably plug those back in. But for the time being, we're exclusively Litecoin.
So is that something you monitor actively, like kind of on a day-to-day basis? You're going like, when is something profitable, when it's not? Like, what kind of time frame do you look at? Obviously, you can't do like minute-to-minute. Maybe you can. Profitability. Do you have like software that kind of monitors where you're at and if it's worth having the machine on?
So we do, but as a matter of course, we know that, you know, a rough ballpark for us to mine Bitcoin profitability, you know, profitably with our computers might be at about 72K. So at 72K when, and again, that's okay. At today's prices. So hash rate continues to go up. So when we get to around that figure, we'll probably look at plugging them back in. And the other coins like, you know, Ethereum Classic, you know, you can see pretty easily, if that goes up. And same thing with Kadena. Like I'd get all the alerts on my phone, but we haven't had any alerts from explosive upside growth on some of these altcoins yet. It's not altcoin season. So we're just kind of sitting back and monitoring it more passively in the meantime. So
that's interesting.
Go ahead. I imagine that with the Bells thing now, like you're the profit for script mining has just increased even more, right?
So we were a little bit disappointed, actually. I thought it was going to go up. I was hoping it would go up, you know, 20%, but I think we might've gotten another maybe 7% out of it, which is still great. We'll take it. And even that shortly after the, I want to call it the Litecoin merge, right? The Bells coin merge. Shortly after that, that even dropped a little bit more. So we saw a little bit of a bump. There was actually some altcoin mining that we were mining with our script computers in the background. And a couple months ago, it wasn't Digibyte. It was another one. It was one of these little low cap coins. I think there's like five or six that we're doing. And one of them had taken a big spike. I don't even know the name of this thing, but it had taken like a big spike.
Or something like that.
What's that?
Wasn't there one like Einsteinium that used to be a script mining coin?
It might have been that. It was a coin I hadn't even heard of. And it spiked for a month or 6 weeks. And so our profitability like exploded, which was really nice. It also coincided with Litecoin having that pop recently to about 115, and Dogecoin popped up to whatever it was, 17, 18 cents. And so we had 6 weeks there that were real good. And then when everything settled back down, it's, you know, you forget those times pretty easily.
I'm looking at it. Was it Catcoin?
It was something dumb like that. I don't know what it was, but I was happy to get it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny that you can just kind of pick. So how do you liquidate something like that? Like, do you have to go actively seek out like, oh, I don't even know where we would sell this thing?
We take all our payout in Litecoin. So for us, it was okay. Just more Litecoin every day.
So you're using something like a NiceHash.
We have NiceHash. We have accounts there. And when we do GPU mining, or if we do some of these altcoin mining, we might go through them. But right now we're not. Right now it's all unplugged.
Okay. Okay. And how long have you been, you know, kind of when did you get started mining? Like what prompted the decision? I mean, it's kind of a big, like mine was obviously we were thinking, hey, we're going to get rich, and we picked a bad time. But we also did the other thing we did. I think I want to ask you about is we kind of played the market of the machines themselves.
Yeah.
But how long, when did you get started and kind of what prompted you to get started in it?
Right around when the world shut down from COVID. So about March 2020 is when we got into crypto, quote unquote, right? And and within a few months, we had our first GPU rigs and we had L3s. We had a few dozen L3s at the time, and they weren't as cheap then as they are now. We had, cause L7s weren't out yet. And then, so we did that. We had a few Eagle Song and some Bitcoin miners and, you know, a couple dozen Bitcoin miners, that kind of stuff. And so we were running them all at the time, started out of my house, and then we upgraded all the panels and the transformer at the house. And then we outgrew that. We made our first, commercial mine, our 1 megawatt mine in outside of Orlando. And, it was a neat enterprise. And then we worked on a spot out in Daytona to get that one live. And then now ultimately we've got our, North Carolina mine, and that one, we've got plenty of room for growth. So we're growing there.
Is Florida, awesome. It seems like it'd be the toughest environment with the salty air and the heat, right?
Yeah. We, at one point we had an Airbnb on the water in Key Largo. And we were mining with GPUs and then later L7s out of the basement, out of the garage on the first floor of the Keys. And even though the electric rate was higher, because we had, you know, tenants that were paying, you know, the monthly rent there, it actually ended up increasing our profitability at that site greatly, which was wonderful. And then, so we had split them between our Orlando house and then that house. And then, we grew into to our first facility at in Orlando, our first commercial facility. So everything went there as soon as that went live.
Was it pretty small at that point? Because I'm like sitting here thinking, even in Ohio, like the heat was ridiculous. Like how much, I could not believe the airflow that was required for it. Like I would turn these things on and it was like
taking the noise,
vacuum,
right?
And sucking air. It all came in through the upstairs, you know, and yeah, I mean, you know, but I got to imagine you're kicking out all this heat and you're in Florida already. Your Airbnb guests must have been.
It was a separate garage. It was the downstairs garage. So we locked that up and they heard the equivalent of an air conditioner, you know, unit, right? Just and it was all immersion to keep them from corroding. So we had an immersion tank. Yeah.
That's a ticket, eh? That's how that you can accomplish it with the.
Even to this day, the computers we have immersed, we've had one hashboard ever on any of them go bad. Never had a bad power supply, never had, you know, and there's no fans to go bad. So they just run like clockwork. And in the winter up here in North Carolina, you don't even have to run your oil coolers because it's so cold outside. You can run the tank. You know, we've got four set up in series. We can bring it down to one. And even then, just the pump is enough usually to it forces the oil through the coils and it's so cold out. I did a video actually, and I put it on X of spending the night out there. So we spent the night for like a week straight. It was 5 days straight under the heat of the ASICs. It was like 20 degrees outside and we'd sleep under the exhaust side with, you know, hearing protection in and, from a couple hundred L7s. Right. So it was actually perfectly temp. I think it was like 70 degrees under the 72 degrees under the exhaust side. So it gets cold enough in North Carolina that you don't have lots of problems, but the humidity problem you don't have at all. I mean, Florida humidity, we had boards that did get corroded. I mean, we were 30 minutes. Well, we were maybe 20 miles from the ocean as the crow flies, and the corrosion did take out more boards than up here by far.
Because of the salt in the air.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned, I'm wondering, do you guys buy used machines? Like if somebody is listening and is like, you know what, I plugged in, because mining is, it's easy, but it's difficult. And what I mean by that is like, once you get the machine, you plug it in, you just literally turn it on and you're doing the thing. Like it doesn't, you don't have to do anything, but it's difficult to manage a little bit of the airflow, the heat flow. When is it profitable? When is it not? Right. It's not literally just click it on and make money and walk away from it. It feels like that sometimes, but So a lot of people get into it, like myself, and they, you know, after a while, it's like, all right, this just isn't making enough money. You turn them off, and then what do you do with this brick? Do you get a lot of people that reach out to you? They're interested in, hey, I've got two or three machines. Would you take them off my hands? And obviously, you're going to pay market rate, but I'm just wondering if somebody out there might be interested.
We did. Our last lot, actually, we bought an engineered fluids system, and it came with it was an immersion system with the oil and everything, and it came with, I want to say it was 7 L7s. And so we bought it all, you know, at market rate. They said, hey, we want this. But it was from one of our normal new dealers. And so he normally sells us, you know, new equipment. He says, hey, I got this guy we sold equipment to. He's looking to sell it. But other than that, everything we buy, we pretty much go new, just because I'm not seeing a lot of people selling them used. But when we can get a used one, I'm happy to get a used one, especially immersed like the ones we got. But I think we, other than those 7, I don't think we've bought any used L7s.
Because they got that, you want them specifically designed for the immersion.
Well, those, because they were already immersed. So we actually were buying we wanted to buy the immersion equipment, and he had L7s. Oh, gotcha. And I said, I don't want your computers. And he says, no, I've got a bunch of L7s. I was like, okay, well, how much for the L7s? And so we were able to make a package deal, because we only want L7s. And we can prep something from air cool to make it ready for immersion in, you know, maybe 10 minutes a computer. So we've got the ability to immerse them quickly, but when they're immersed, you know that they've been taken care of. They're in good shape. I mean, because they just last so much longer when they're immersed. So I think all of our new plays, you know, as we're looking at another facility up here, and our goal would be to deploy, you know, all immersed there. And we've got some pads ready and prepped for immersion boxes. So when the market gives us the liquidity to buy some more immersion setups, we'll probably go full immersion. So I think that's the way of the future for sure.
Is it addictive? Like, once you make a little money and you get the opportunity to buy more machines, you're like, we'll just buy more. Cause you mentioned you had a past in real estate, and that's kind of the mentality when you're doing rentals, right? Like, you buy a house. Once you get to the point where you're profitable X amount every month, let's mortgage another one. Right. And let's just keep stacking these mortgages on top of each other. You never realize the gains. You just sit there and wait someday. That's kind of, is that kind of the idea? Just, I'm going to keep increasing my stack, so to speak.
100%. I think that the upside in Litecoin mining is higher than the upside in Litecoin. And I'm super bullish on the price of Litecoin too. But like Litecoin mining, there's not only, again, we were talking a little bit earlier, but just as an idea, right? If you're mining a half a dozen coins and 45% of your revenue is coming from Doge and 45 is from Litecoin, let's say you're making a Litecoin a day, right? And the whole market goes up 10x. You don't go from a $70 Litecoin a day to a $700 Litecoin a day. You go from 1 Litecoin a day to 1.5 Litecoin a day, and from 70 to 700. So you're not going from 70 to 700. You're going from 70 to 1,000 or more. And you're... So
why the 1.5? Is that because of the Dogecoin reward?
Correct. Dogecoin and Bell's Coin and Digibyte and all these other things that we're mining at the same time. Because we're taking our payout in Litecoin, we actually, when the whole market goes up, we get more Litecoin per day than we would otherwise. And the value of the computers goes up commensurately. So let's say that the computers are sold at 100 cap, right? They're sold at 100% ROI at, say, 7 cents, right? So at 7 cents electric, if your computer profits you $4,000 a year, it'll sell for $4,000, which is a 100% ROI. But when the market goes up and now you're making, you know, $1,000 a day off of it, you're off of these computers, you know, X amount of computers, all of a sudden your computer goes up more than linearly. It goes up exponentially, as well as the coins themselves. So you actually, that's pretty much all we've done. We've, you know, some people stack sats and some people stack lights. We stack Litecoin hash rate. And so, you know, we've taken very, very little out of it ever. Even the monies we're entitled to, we don't touch it. It just goes right back into more hash rate. And so the vast majority of the computers there are actually ours. They're not even investors per se. They're ours. We buy them. And when we have months with extra profit, like when that pop happened from some doo-doo coin, we were able to pick up another half a dozen L7s. And so it didn't go into our pockets. It didn't go into Litecoin. It went into more hash rate. And so we're a big believer in that, right? Like in the same way of real estate, right? Like you get a real estate parcel and you sell it, you make good money. You don't go buy a Lamborghini, you go buy two pieces of real estate instead of one, you know? And so that growing of the net wealth, both from a tax perspective and a long-term investment play, is just, to me, so much better than holding any coin. And if I was going to hold coins, it'd just be Litecoin. And we do have some, but anytime we can save up and get another L7 or 4 or however many more we can get, we want to get them.
Yeah, because the L7 itself is by proxy Litecoin, right?
Correct.
Because that was the one decision I made in mining that I was happy about is, again, like literally had them like 6 months and they were unprofitable. It's like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, we can try to sell them now when they're worth literally nothing, right? I mean, they went from like, we probably paid $750 for an L3 and it was like $100 with the power supply by the time we got done, basically giving them away. Mm-hmm. And we're like, you know what? Let's just wait and we'll sell them the next bull market. And Dogecoin was great. It made it where we could sell them and really just get our money back. But
yeah.
So I'm curious about, because this has been something we've talked a little bit about and I don't understand in how this works or if it even is real, about using these machines at some point, maybe to help with AI. That seems to be the new selling point. Is that just BS or is there some future where this actually makes sense?
So I'm unaware of, without major hardware modifications, making an L7 work for anything AI related. Now you can with GPUs. And so I know a lot of miners that are mining with GPUs and they're using the GPUs and they're essentially kind of doing what you would do with mining. They hook it up to AI servers and they lease that power and the GPUs for AI. And I do think that a big play, the longer we got into this, the more I realized like the actual access to the power itself is the asset, because that's what you're converting into Litecoin, for lack of a better term. You're converting electricity right into Litecoin. So having access to more electricity gives you access to a variety of things. So like we have four of our buildings now that aren't built out. The power's there, the power's live, the power's affordable. We're running a couple of the buildings now, but I've got another 6 megawatts that are sitting there unused and they're unbuilt out. So we're building out racks, presuming L7s. But if somebody comes in and says, hey, we want to run a GPU farm, come lease that building or two of these buildings and set up a GPU farm and do AI or do, you know, speculative mining. Like I was just talking with, Son of a Tech, the YouTube guy, we were at a mining conference and we were chatting on the plane and he does speculative GPU mining. So like he mined the mess out of Caspa and you can go check his channel out and stuff, but he mined all the Caspa when it was marginally or borderline profitable. And then he just holds them. And then he goes to the next algorithm for a week. But if you've got a decent amount of GPUs, you can spec mine all these different doo-doo coins, right? And then hold them all in a wallet. You're paying the electric, but electric for GPUs is really not too much of anything. And you're basically holding all these lotto tickets, right? You're holding, some of them could be a dud, most of them, 80, 90% of them could be dud coins. But if all it takes is that one good coin and it does what Caspa does, and now all of a sudden you've got a ton of money sitting there that you can then, in my mind, would be deployed right into L7s. But yeah, so there's a bunch of different plays, spec mining, leasing the AI, creating your own AI business out of it with GPUs, right? And GPUs are affordable right now, so it's a great business model to get into. Anything really, I think that what we've started doing is focusing on the articles. Like we see these articles come out. I'm not even looking at the price of Litecoin. I'm looking at the need and demand on the power grid in the coming years. Mm-hmm. And the need and demand from everything from AI to electric cars, to mining, all of these plays are coming out with this massive demand on the grid. And so I think having access to the power will really be the future of commerce, right? Like our world is driven by electricity. And so having access to that grid and then finding a way to make it profitable in the meantime is a huge advantage.
I guess you see mining as a path towards renewable, or I guess expanding renewable energy sources.
I think it is the best way for sure to drive renewables in terms of innovation. So like if you have electricity at 7 cents and you can drive that down by a penny, like I moved my family for the most part to North Carolina over 1.1 2 cents off of my electric rate, right? So that 1.2 cents is so big that it, like, I'm my pet projects now, I'm in the garage, I'm in the shop working on how I can decrease my electric usage. And so some of that's firmware, right? So we do that with firmware, and some of that's hardware where we can take some fans off, or we can override some things in the computers that don't need it. And even the physical component of it. Like, I love the mechanical engineering aspect of it, where can I get a more efficient pump for my immersion? Can I get more efficient fans for my oil coolers? Can I set the exhaust fans on a variable timer that will allow me to reduce the speed of them when it's cold and it's at night, and then increase them again during the day. So things like that to drive consumption down and to create renewable energies. I don't think that there's any industry on the planet that will do more and has done more, in my opinion, in the in terms of per years of going live, right? For right. driving renewable energy and driving the cost of power down. Because that that is your number one, you know, expense. At the moment, we have no employees. It's my father-in-law and I and our partners. And my father-in-law and I are working, you know, at the mine, like it's, you know, a full-time job. And we're trying to drive renewables and trying to drive heat recapture. We're trying to drive, you know, efficiency. And, you know, we've got the timers, even on the halogen light fixtures, right? The timers, hey, if you've been out of the room for 10 minutes, there's no movement. So sometimes we got to get off the ladder and wave our hands, right? But anything to save a little bit of electricity, I think that mining is really at the cutting edge of that. Yeah.
So have you, like, did you kind of construct a lot of this immersion cooling? I know you said you bought a rack or whatever, but have you become a plumbing expert in fluid dynamics and all that type of stuff?
Well, expert's a very generous word. I wouldn't go that far. I don't know if there's any experts that I'm aware of in this field. I mean, I've met people that proclaim to be, but we did design all of our own tanks. So we didn't buy them. I drew them on graph paper. And then gave him to a fabricator. He was the guy that, you know, I'm a GC. So he was the guy that used to fabricate all my old highway railings and handrails for parks and stuff. I said, here's the dimensions. Can you make this? He says, what's this for? I said, well, it's a parts cooler. It's for keeping some parts cool. He's like, well, talk to me. And I didn't want to talk about what we're doing. I'm like, it pumps in oil and pumps out
none
oil.
Your business.
None your business. It keeps it cool. And he's a good guy. And so I think we're on our version 5 now. And, so now we've got them, you know, where they're laser etched mini mines in the back and they're right where I think where we want them. But even then there's just so many improvements we can do on them. And so every time we'll do one and then we say, all right, we want to do these improvements on the next one. So now we've got them. So a skid steer can pick them up and move them around and things like that. So there's a bunch that goes into it. We've even started fabricating our own oil. One of my best friends out in Tampa, he manufactures oil. And so we've been able to say, hey, this is our mini mines proprietary oil and plug the computers in and our stuff. So we're not beholden to the supply chain at the specific mining level. We're beholden to the supply chain globally. Like if citrus oil runs out, right? Like I'm monitoring the canker disease on the citrus in Florida because our oil is a citrus-based oil, right? So it's like the price of orange juice drives my oil price more than the price of Bitcoin. And so it's kind of nice though to be able to have it where it's not custom tailored for somebody else's product, but it's custom tailored for what we need. And we don't have to wait for the big mining companies when they all sell out. Hopefully we won't be sold out either. So
Do you have like a, because you've learned a lot about the kind of heat dispersion, all that, do you have like a fantasy build where you're like, man, if I could build my house X amount of distance from the mine and take the heat through that fluid and heat my home and you have a hot tub, the floors, I mean, everything runs off this fluid. That's what I would be imagining. Even just to melt snow on my driveway. That's what I wanted to do with it.
We used it at one point. Back in the Keys, we would pump water out of the canal and then back in the canal, unadulterated by any oils, and it would just pump it and cool it. So we were heating the canal to an indiscernible amount, right? So like it wasn't actually heating the water, but it was cooling our handful of machines. And I love that idea. Like, hey, it was too loud in the neighborhood, so we had to do something that wasn't loud. Right. And so we've got, that was a different kind of setup than we have now, but, anything we can do to recapture. So, when we were doing it out of our house, it for sure on the rare cold days in Florida, we did not have to worry about a heater. We would just open the door to, where our immersion setup was, and just the radiant heat would heat the house. Cause we were running, I think 14 L7s out of the house. And so, but it was silent, right? So I love the idea of creating and innovating new stuff. I think that it is the most, you're going to see the most explosive growth in businesses that do that type of stuff. And in this industry, it does seem when you first get into it, like, hey, this is easy. You plug it in and play. But if you can increase 1% and then decrease your power 1% and increase your hash rate 1% and decrease your power 2%, all these tweaks and modifications help it be more profitable in the long run. How can I use less oil so I can immerse more computers without needing to buy more oil, right? So all of those components play into it. You know, the oil's not cheap. And so finding ways to do that has been part of the fun, right? It's how do I design a system? I don't want to buy something. You know, the tanks that we fabricated for $3,000 or $4,000, if you went to buy them, last time I had them priced out, they were over $40,000 a tank for the setup. I said, there's no way. And we fabricated our first one for $800. And now they're, you know, they're nicer and they're more elaborate, but even now they're, you know, $3,000 a piece, $3,500 a piece instead of $35,000. So anything you can do to kind of cut those costs down and ultimately boost your bottom line are things we have to look at.
Have you ever considered selling your tanks and fluid as a product?
You know, we have, we looked at that. I don't think there's a big demand at this point. So I've actually been treating them like freeware, like, hey, here's our design. Here's the blueprints. Go have your fabricator fabricate it. We've not been focused on trying to profit on those. I do have a few pieces of tech that we're working on that we are keeping close to the chest until we get our patent. But for energy recapture, right? So how do we recycle this energy? How do we use this for good? How do we drive our electric costs down by these things? But pretty much we've talked about it, right? Like we could set up a booth and sell our tanks for $10,000 easy. And I would imagine they would sell pretty quickly. You know, if the next competitor is at $30,000, well, I would think that we'd get it pretty easy, but we haven't really pursued that. I just assume let somebody that is passionate about building a tank here's the plans we've got, go improve it and make it your own, or come to our site and see what we've got. And then, you know, and here's the dimensions, go make something better. Here's the 10 changes I would make off of V4 to get, or V5 to make V6 or whatever. So I think that we're not really looking at that as a profit center at this point. We're really focused on increasing our script hash rate.
Yeah, but people are lazy, Nathan. They want you to do it for them.
Of course.
I mean, he's done all the work already. You just need to find a fabricator.
Hey, just right? get a little paid for it. Well, I do want to ask you, so before I kind of want to ask some stuff about regulation and where you are and kind of how that has impacted you guys, but what, so I went on your website and you guys are looking for investors, right? You're looking at it as a play to diversify your portfolio. There's maybe some tax advantages to it. So kind of give me like the basics of what kind of money are you looking for? What are you doing with that money? And how do I benefit as a potential investor?
Sure. So we have I like to think I've never seen anybody that's doing what we're doing in terms of our business structure. So we, you know, come from a background where we specifically were looking for tax advantage plays. That's how we got into mining, right? We wanted a tax shelter, a legal, legit tax shelter. My wife's a CPA, right? So it's all going to be like super above board and super clear cut and super audited and the whole thing. And we found that, and again, she probably wouldn't want me to share this. She thinks I boost her up too much, but she's probably the best CPA I've ever met, at least in the top three, in terms of how to structure things for, you know, tax advantage. And so we
is
got
into right there. Is that what's going
no,
on?
No, she's in the other room. So she probably won't even watch the podcast. She's like, you and your Litecoin thing. So she probably won't even watch it. But we sat down, we did tax strategy as our prime directive, actually, even in our contracting companies and our real estate companies. It was, how do we save taxes? Our number one cost over, including over and above employees, you know, when we had a few dozen employees at the time, was our number one cost was tax. So we would tax plan 2+ years in advance. How do we legally avoid, within the structure of the IRS, having to pay taxes? And we always, the Lord was gracious to us, and we always found a way to legally get out of having to pay those taxes. And so one of the things that we did with this was we wanted to structure it in a way that our investors that had tax problems could invest and not have tax problems, right? So the type of fund that we have means only accredited investors can invest. So people whose net worth is over $1 million, excluding their primary residence, or that have made $250K per year for the last 2 years, or are certified financial professionals, right? So those are the only three people that can invest in our fund. And it's a 50K buy-in. And we kind of set it up like, if my mom was the only investor, how would I do it, right? And it's you fund it, we'll run it, and we'll split the profits. And that includes when we sell the business, that includes, you know, your cut of that business as we sell it. If that's a 20x multiple, then great. We'll split that too. The cost of the computer.
You're buying a portion of the business. You're basically buying private shares.
Correct. We're selling equity. And as okay. partners in the business, we're allowed to pass through that bonus appreciation. I believe it's through a IRS form called a K-1, where ultimately if they invest $200,000, we give them a K-1 that says, here's your $200,000 bonus appreciation, which is treated for tax purposes as a write-off, except if you're going to apply for a loan, like you need a mortgage, you say, hey, I need to show that extra $200,000, you still can show it, because they add back, when you're looking for a loan or a mortgage, they add back your depreciation. It's a beautiful tax structure where they can legally get a full write-off for every dollar that they invest, and they can show it for if they need to show their income for their next enterprise or the next commercial building they're buying or whatever they're buying, they can show that as income. And so we actually have three or four different entities that are structured in such a way that that so far we haven't had to pay any taxes. Now I'm hoping that there's a year that comes where there's just no tax loopholes. You just got to pay a big fat amount, but that'll be a really good year. So we haven't gotten those years yet. So right now it's been a really great play for our investors. They say, hey, we've got a tax problem. Well, here, you invest here. Here's your K-1. You don't have to worry about the tax problem now. And then we basically split it. So they'll invest. It all goes into Litecoin hash rate. We take a 10% net of electric, which ends up being like, as a management fee for our labor, right? It ends up being like 6% or 5%. They get what's called a preferred return. They get 7%. Whether we pay them back or not, they've got a perpetually accruing 7%. And they get 50-50 of all of the profits of the mine. And when we sell it, they get 50-50 of all the profits of what we sell it for. So presuming Litecoin at least 2x's, they'll get all of their money back. Plus we pay them back quarterly. We pay their original investment back quarterly. So it ends up being like 17%. Annually they get back plus 7%. So they're making 24% on their money, and they still have the upside of the crypto. So they're happy, because most of these people are used to real estate where they're getting 7-11%. And so if they're getting 24% back plus profits, I think the first year we did it, I think it annualized out to like 30-something% back to them. And so they're happy. They still have another 5 years to go of getting their payback, and they've already got a third of it back. So they're tickled pink. We're tickled pink because we can grow our business. And it's just been a really good thing. We have a bunch of really good, great people, our investors. We've actually been blessed with some incredible people. So I like people that you want to hang out with, right? These are people you want to call on a Thursday night and do a Bible study with, or have a bourbon with, right? They're just really neat people. So it's been a really great experience so far.
Yeah. What's the, what's been the influence of like the major miners on you guys? Cause like, I know you're obviously using pools. How do they impact, I guess I'm getting back into the technical running. Let me sidebar. I had a question, but I want to continue to explore the investment side of it. So, Yeah. So if the price doubles, you're, which from here is not that exciting, right? $130 or something like that. That's when you've, I mean, when is that breaking point, or when you feel like your investors are going to start to realize some really good gains? Is it a 50%, you know, $100 Litecoin? Are you on the verge of it? Can they make money if the price doesn't move a lot? Like if it only, yeah, if it appreciates 10, 20% a year, is that still exciting, or is it mostly the tax advantage that is what they're primarily buying?
So I would say that our electric costs of goods sold are around $35 to $40 per Litecoin. But our other bills, you know, we've got the facility costs, we've got two facility costs, right? And so we've got and we got the fiber optic, you know, and it's not much, but every little bit adds up, right? Your fiber optic's $1,000 a month. That doesn't, you know, it's not a lot when you consider you've got all these computers, but it is a lot because it's $1,000 a month, right? And and so all those things end up adding to maybe another $20. So our cost of goods sold are probably around, including all of our bills, including, you know, maybe $50 a coin. So if you look at it from that perspective, it, Litecoin at $70, you've got that $20 per coin profit. But if Litecoin goes up 20%, your profit doesn't go up 20% because your profit was $20. And mm-hmm. so your profit goes up, you know, up another like 30%. Right? Yeah. So at $100 Litecoin, our investors would probably be making over 50% ROI annually. And that's not a big gap to go from 70 to 100, you know, in crypto, that's not even an hour, right? So, So at $100 Litecoin, we had a month or two there, where it was probably averaged out to like 90. The returns for the investors were incredible. And so we kind of are counting to some extent on there being a large upside in Litecoin or Dogecoin or Digibyte or Bell's coin or any of the above or all of the above, right? And it becomes exponential. So if you figure a computer, and just for round figures, a computer makes $10, makes $11 worth of your coin, right? Your Litecoin, and it costs $10 electric. The coin doubles and goes from $11 to $22. But again, because we're merge mining multiple coins, if the market doubles, we don't go from $11 in coin to 22, we go from 11 to 33. Your profit went from $1 to $32. Your profit actually 32x's, even though the entire market only 2x'd. So it's a really powerful, unleveraged, like there's no debt in it and there's no bots involved, right? We can do those things, but we're not doing those things. It's just a super powerful exponential upside on top of Litecoin. So the market just 2x's, our profit 30x's. I mean, I can't think of a better business model than that. And so at $70 Litecoin, we're not too profitable, right? The bills are paid and, you know, that's about it, and that's okay. But at $100 Litecoin,
sorry, because you got an investment that's not tethered to the cost, like
correct
cost of production. This is something I talk about all the time. Like people go, well, hash rate's going up, so price has to go up. It's like, not really, man. The price is not dictated by the cost of production. Like that's like almost a communist thinking, right? Like if I go dig for 5 hours, somebody has to pay me $50. No, like that's, you have to do something productive with it. Yeah. I mean, that's interesting. Do you guys accept investments internationally, or is it just US based at this point?
Yeah. So, we have a attorney that handles all of the compliance with the SEC. And so, yeah, he says you can take an investor from anywhere. They get a letter from their CPA that says they're an accredited investor and come on in. And he processes through all the, all that and maintains regulation for us on a monthly basis.
Okay. And we got any questions? I feel like I'm dominating.
Yeah, here. I mean, with regards to the mining equipment, you mentioned earlier that you do have some Bitcoin miners, but they're just not turned on because they're just not as profitable as the Scrypt miners. I guess that's because you have a limited amount of rack space or electricity at your disposal. And I'm wondering, I mean, that's really interesting. I found that to be kind of fascinating because it seems like most of the world is focused on Bitcoin and Bitcoin mining, and all these big like Bitcoin mining firms. You got Riot and Marathon and stuff, and Bitfarms. They're all maximalists, right? They don't look at anything else other than Bitcoin. And it seems like a missed opportunity for these guys, especially when they're competing, you know, right now in the stock market, right? Like Riot's vying for ownership of Bitfarms, or at least they were, saying they were mismanaged and whatever. They're like, they own a large stake and, you know, they want them to try harder. And I'm thinking to myself, like, why are these guys so stuck on Bitcoin when there's more profit in Litecoin and Script? Yeah, I don't know if you have any insights as to that, or if you think it's just, you know, these guys are just chasing what they believe is, what is the trend of the day and what they believe will be the dominant chain in the long run. Or are they sticking to like some kind of an ethos, or do you think they're more and more going to be moving towards satisfying their shareholders and the stock price?
You know, that's a great question. And I have opinions about it, but again, it's probably way above my pay grade, right? So, but I'm happy to throw my hat in the ring in terms of what I think is happening. I think the bigger the ship is, the longer it takes to change course. And so you've got these people that probably had to struggle to get their investors to say, hey, look, this is a Bitcoin play. And most of them, I would venture to say well over 90% of them probably have no idea the fundamentals of Bitcoin, let alone have even heard of Litecoin, even though Litecoin is used as much as Bitcoin, right? So they hear Bitcoin's on the news. And so they say, I want a Bitcoin play. So that's probably part of it, is their investors don't understand even Bitcoin, let alone Litecoin. And so trying to get them to believe in a Bitcoin in and of itself, let alone, hey, there's some other profitable plays here. And some of them, if you're not digging into the tech, right, if you're not understanding the why Bitcoin is successful, and that's the same why that makes Litecoin successful and will make it even more so. If you're not digging into the why, they probably look at Litecoin like they would look at, you know, Ethereum or Digibyte, or, you know, any coin that they don't understand, or Dogecoin, or pick, you know, any meme coin that is purely speculation. They wouldn't understand that. So they would first have to educate investors, and then they'd also have to probably change their missions. So most of their mission statements are tied to Bitcoin. They would have to change their mission statement. That means they'd have to have a board meeting, and they'd have to have an investors in, and they'd have to talk about it. And there would probably be a huge drop in their price, because people that don't understand the space are going to say, oh, I already thought that Bitcoin is speculative, and now you want some other doo-doo coin, not understanding what it is. They'd probably jump ship, and it would cost them, in their case, probably many millions of dollars, if not more. And so I think that they're probably really afraid of that. And until the next bull run is in full swing, right, I think that they'll probably shy away from it. I do think that if the Litecoin price action in terms of US dollars does what I think, or even a fraction of what most of us think it'll do, they'll probably have an eye-opening experience to say, hey, there's more to this crypto world than anything else. But even, you know, look at super bright guys like Michael Saylor, right? Like, I love his content, and he's right, and he's like, you know, on almost everything that he says. But remember, whatever it was 5, 6, 7 years ago, he says, hey, Bitcoin's funny money, it's going away. And now he recognizes it as, in his words, you know, the hardest asset the planet's ever seen. And now he's saying things like there is no second best. And I can see him continuing to grow in his knowledge and understanding of the blockchain space, and saying things like there is only a second best in this Litecoin, or something like that, which I would disagree, right? I think it's the first best. But I can see him evolving and changing as he went from a no-coiner to a Bitcoin maxi. I think it's intellectually dishonest to remain a Bitcoin maxi and understand and study Litecoin and not also become a Litecoin maxi. So I can see somebody as bright as him changing.
I think he's an example, though, of he's vested, right? He's making a play. He's telling a story. And I do think people get caught up in the story. And I probably posted this 100 times whenever somebody goes out of business, that Bitcoin only is a death sentence. You can't run a business and like put blinders on to the market. And I like what you said earlier about, like, you are you're essentially selling that, maybe the ease of access or the ability to, whatever the end result of whatever you're going to use the electricity for, really you're in the business of facilitating that process of utilizing electricity at a really low rate to generate something on the other side, whether it's AI or whatever. And if you lose sight of that, like if you become too invested in any of the assets that get produced, you're kind of setting yourself up for disaster, right? If you want to build something long and sustainable, you really have to focus on what is it that I'm actually building? What service am I providing? Like I talk about my life, like I sell packaging, and like a lot of times you get into talking about the actual product as opposed to like, what's the service we provide? Like, why would they use our stuff? It's most of the time, it isn't the actual product. It's like, you know, easy to do business with, right? Like you save me money on, you know, delivery or storage or whatever, right? Like you have to really get down to the nuts and bolts of what is it that I provide that's valuable, and how do I bring that to the forefront and not lose sight of what my core business really is and what is it that makes me money. So whether it's Litecoin, Dogecoin, Bellscoin, Catcoin, or whatever we're talking about, at the end of the day, it's about efficiently accessing those things and for your investors to be able to realize the most gains. And so, loyalty is important, but yeah, again, you can't be a one asset house. And it is interesting you say that about boards of directors and changing visions. And I know Marathon seems to be the only one that steered away. They went to that CAS. They started mining CASPA maybe over the summer, but all the other ones, to your point, Animal, they've stuck to the script from what I can tell. We don't know. Maybe they are running L3s or L7s. You know, we don't know that.
It seems like now is the best time to buy Litecoin miners. I mean, the price of the coin is down. The price of the miners. I mean, if so, then L9 is like what, like 20,000 US or something. Is that price locked in? Is it going to be? Is it going to double in price when Litecoin doubles? Probably. You know. It's interesting.
Are you deploying into L9s, Nathan? Or are they not proving to be worth the investment right now?
So we're not at the moment. One of the reasons for that is because the firmware to be able to overclock them isn't yet invented. So like an L7, we can overclock 50%, whereas an L9 can only run stock. And so our profitability is skewed towards greater profitability using firmware that we can undervolt or overclock right now. Another reason for that is L9s are great for deploying if you have a limited amount of electrical capacity. And we have, for our purposes, an unlimited amount of electrical capacity. I mean, we have megawatts available right now to deploy. And so I would say right now we probably plan to stick with L7s. L9s are going to be great plays. They're going to be, it'll be the next late model. But in terms of US dollar ROI, we're still right now seeing higher ROI dollar per dollar for the machine. So, an L7 is about 30% the cost of an L9. And so, and an L9 produces double the Litecoin. So we can actually get an extra 25% of Litecoin by getting two L7s and save money than one L9.
You're buying them aftermarket. You're buying the L7s and
we're getting them new, but we're getting there's no such thing as wholesaling in the space, right? It's everybody's trying to make a buck. That's the problem. You're not going to buy them directly. Nobody buys them directly from, Bitmain unless you're spending, $30 million on a truck. So, I should say nobody that's, if you're not publicly traded, you're not buying from Bitmain probably.
Really? I bought from Bitmain back in the day. Is that not just not feasible anymore?
I don't trust Bitmain's reps as far as I can throw them. My reps, because they have a reputation, they'll say, hey, here's a price. And if something's dead on arrival, they'll personally take it back and they'll deal with Bitmain directly because they'll buy the truck from Bitmain and they might mark it up whatever it is, 5%, 10%.
Yeah.
But the customer service and that having that liaison between us and Bitmain only takes crypto in my experience anyway, the real Bitmain. And so they say they take dollars, but most of the time I've not had good experiences with them. And so we get ours from stateside reps because I want to be able to, from the time I order it, I want to have it within 7 days in my hands. I want it plugged in a week. And Bitmain, when we looked to go through Bitmain, between the minimum order quantities and all the other issues we ran into, we've only ever gone through a secondhand dealer. We can use a credit card, and that doesn't happen with Bitmain for sure. We've been really fortunate to have good experiences in purchasing them, and I'm not at the moment yet looking to rock the boat. We like our guys we've been getting some good experience. We had most of them shipped directly from China, from the same city, but not from the Bitmain rep. So I think what they do is they all pitch in together and order a truck. And then everybody says, hey, I want to buy X amount from the truck, and they can ship it right to us. So we've got ours directly from China, which, you know, is good.
Do you have any exposure with other miners? I know there was a couple of mining firms at the summit. I'm thinking of Locotech. And the other guys with that home miner, what are they called? Ella Tech miners. Is that what they're?
Something like that. Yeah. We haven't used Ella Tech. I know what you're talking about. If that's what it's called. Yeah. We haven't tangled with them too much, but, we're friends with, Ben Miklaszek and over there, the Locotech team. They've got an incredible product. I can't wait till it comes out. And even Ruben, who runs PowerPool. He founded PowerPool.io. That's the pool that we use, and he's great. And then he recently is partnered with Ben Miklaszek. I think there was a relationship or an equity share or something that they had going on there. And that's been great. We've got great relationships with them, and I'm excited to get some of the Locotech products. When they come out, those will probably be the, I'd love to think we'd venture into that before we ventured into L9s. Mm-hmm. Just because they're so much more efficient. And Ruben has been incredible over at PowerPool. They're top-notch team, super bright young guy, right? I guess the brightest sometimes in this field are, but super young guy, but just super bright. And he knows his stuff, and he's been really great on the customer service side for the stuff we needed from the pool.
Yeah. Locotech feels like a good high risk, high reward play. Not that you don't trust those guys, but if the numbers produce what they say,
yeah.
And day one, you've got them in your setup and you're cranking out 100. I mean, I think you have to have quite a few of those because they don't produce a lot, but the consumption is so low. Like you could run those, you could probably run those off of a solar panel or something, right? I mean, that'd be kind of cool.
Maybe they can get
back into mining again.
Yeah. They consume, I think, about what a, the equivalent of like a, you know, a late model GPU was, you know, would do. So they call them, you know, hash blades, but I believe that's what they call them, script blades or hash blades. But sell them in a server rack like you would buy a GPU rig
or use server rack or something.
So if I'm just about the investment part, if I'm in the US and I have a financial advisor, can they access your product for me through like a fund, like a IRA or something like that? Oh, okay.
So I shouldn't say yeah. I should say there's certain ways to do that. Yes. So financial professionals are able to invest. I don't know if they're able to invest on somebody else's behalf. I would have to ask that question.
Okay.
But that is a really great question. I don't know if I've been asked. We've talked about doing a separate fund, but I think you can't do both at the same time. We talked about doing it for unaccredited investors too, which would be great because we've had a lot of people that are saying, hey, I'm not an accredited investor, but I want in. But we haven't yet gone that route. I think you can run one or the other. You can't run both. I think you can go from unaccredited investors to accredited investors, but you can't go from, you can't have the two simultaneously. So we'd have to discontinue the accredited investors and then allow anybody to invest, which we've talked about, and I think might be the play for this upcoming year.
Yeah, I guess it just depends on if you feel like there's more money out there to be had. I don't know the whole, what the legality is behind that, but Yeah, you got the best CPA in the world, so I'm sure she can figure it out.
She's the CCO lately. She's a chief cookie officer, and so I'm trying to not entangle her in the day to day of it. But the attorney that helped us set up, he's a great guy, Nate Dodson. He actually has like a TikTok channel. I think it's like crowdfunding attorneys or something. But he's done great. He's just done a fabulous job with us, and he's kept us running for 2 years, and all the compliance has been top notch. I'm super happy. But we've had that conversation with him, and I think that we'll probably circle back on that conversation around the December time and maybe transition. At some point we might end up making that transition, but we'll see how December plays out. Cause again, December being your last time to make a tax play and have account for this year. So after the tax play is done in December, going into what I believe to be what I would like to think would be this big up cycle would probably be a good time for us to transition, I think.
Okay. So you're bullish on 2025 then?
Super bullish.
Right on.
I don't know if there's a word strong enough to describe how bullish I am for 2025.
Really? What do you think the catalyst is for that? What is it? Do you think that's going to take something? The election could be part of it, right? Just, I think that there's a lot of anxiety around the election right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of anxiety, especially among, accredited investors. These guys that have been in real estate for years, these guys that have been in businesses for years, they're looking at it, and there's a lot of scared money sitting on the sidelines. And so depending on how that goes, probably will dictate how good 2025 happens in terms of the rest of the economy. But the crypto market, I think, is going to be, it's going to be driven by Bitcoin, right? I think the ETF buying, if you look at the actual inflows, the ETFs, it's just unsustainably astronomical. And what I think happens is, next year, I think the world discovers for the first time what happens when you can't print the asset. And when that happens, I think that I have not seen numbers that in my mind are bullish enough for Bitcoin outside of X, right? Like CNBC won't tell you, BlackRock's not going to tell you. I think it's going to be so mega bullish for Bitcoin because you can't print it. And when that happens, the whole market follows it. And then I think people will start to say, wait, this isn't a fad. There's ETFs in this thing. Big money's in it. BlackRock saying it's a flight to safety, right? All these things that they're saying that they're even stacking Bitcoin in preparation for the dollar devaluation, right? So as they're running from hyperinflation into Bitcoin, people will start to look for secondary assets in the class. And I think, in my opinion, the most logical choice is clearly Litecoin. But as Warren Buffett says, the market can remain irrational longer than you can remain solvent, right? So who knows what happens, but I do think that Bitcoin will see such a massive upside that I think that Litecoin will see a higher, by far higher upside in terms of percentage gain by far. I think that Litecoin and even to a lesser extent Dogecoin, I think they'll just be massively winning plays on the Nakamoto standard for this upcoming cycle. And once the world really figures out the difference between these coins, I think lots of the garbage coins will go away. They'll stay small cap, they'll fall away. And the real hard assets like Bitcoin and Litecoin and mineable coins like that I think that people will start to understand, hey, a mineable coin is different from a fiat coin, right? I think they'll start making that difference, and they'll be forced to learn it. Kind of like our parents were forced to learn emails, right? Our people in our generation will be forced to learn the hard way, whether you like it or not. There's a difference between mineable coins and not mineable coins. That's not saying it's garbage, but it's garbage, right? And then you've got proof of work, which is the only real way to have a tangible asset behind a coin. It's backed by the power grid, right? So I think we'll watch in the next 10 years that happen. But in the meantime, I think that next year will be just and such a mega bullish scenario. And I don't see it following the four-year cycles, right? Like if you look at how early we broke all-time high in Bitcoin, I think that Bitcoin's on its own thing now, which I think is good for Litecoin. I think it makes Litecoin on its own thing now. I think Bitcoin will become this institutional asset, and Litecoin will be where us plebs go, right? I think it's going to be a really, really good scenario for all of the Nakamoto standard. Unbelievably good.
Yeah, right on. No, I tend to agree. I feel like we're still in the very early phases of learning about this stuff. Mm-hmm. And like you were saying earlier, people barely understand how Bitcoin works, right? But yet they're YOLOing like crazy just because they see the number go up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, eventually I do feel like we'll have, you know, our Jesus candle. And then people will start to YOLO in. And hopefully by that point, they'll have a clear understanding of the fundamentals and the value that's derived from, you know, a commoditized crypto like Litecoin and Dogecoin. Yeah.
The longer... I would say, you know, you guys know I say I don't like to talk about price, but I do obviously from time to time. But I think the longer things stay where this disproportionate, you know, use versus price, the longer it stays that way, I think the more likely it becomes that somebody jumps in and says, this is crazy, right? Like they, like you're saying, they dive into the, all right, I'm interested in crypto. What is there besides Bitcoin? Just people who are, alternative thinkers, or like that want to kind of play the antithesis of where the market is, right? Would look at it and go, okay, what's out there? These guys are yelling at me Bitcoin only. I'm a contrarian. I don't want to listen to people. So I'm going to actually do some of my own research. And they go, hold on a second. How can this one go and look at the actual metrics is number one, number two everywhere, and it's 1,000 times less valuable? Like that doesn't even make any sense, right?
Yep.
And so they start building a strategy around accumulation, and like you guys said, it's the scarcity comes into play in short bursts. I think that's the biggest difference between, I had this, you know, shower thought a long time ago about how the price is a lot like when you go to pay a fee on Bitcoin. Like if everybody tries to jump in at once, fees explode because there's that restriction of space. And the same thing is with the money, with the amount of coins, is if everybody's going in all at once, if there's really low volume and low interest, things can really stabilize. The scarcity isn't as impactful. But to your point, Nathan, earlier about the multiples play, is that human emotion is what causes the mania. And that doesn't have like a, you know, two times as many people trying to get in doesn't have a 2x multiple. It's got like a 10x multiple, right? It's like an exponential growth when you have excitement, which is what we saw with Dogecoin. I mean, there's no rational reason why an asset would go 100x in a matter of months like that. It's probably public interest went up 3-4x, or, you know, and yet had a multiple of a multiple. So that's kind of 2 to the power of, I guess we have to, what's that number got to be? 5x all of a sudden you're, what's 2 to the power of 5, animal? Come on, quick.
I want to say 100. I don't know.
4, 8, 16, 32, 64. So there you go.
64.
I'm going to stick that. I just came up with my theorem. 5x in public interest is a 64x in price. There you go. So that's what we got to do. I get to 5x. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if you want to drive. I put your website in the comments, Nathan, if you want to kind of give a quick spiel where to go to visit, you know, maybe how to reach out to you if there's some interest or some questions. Animal, I don't know if you have other questions. I'm trying to keep these things human consumption grade. So yeah, sometimes our spaces go on a little long, and so I think the videos can be too long.
I think we forgot to mention our sponsor, Cake Wallet. They're still sponsoring us, right?
True.
Yeah, they're a great wallet. If you guys are listening, I think we have 100 people watching us. It's kind of weird.
You know, it's 173. Scary. It's hard to tell. I think it accumulates them over time.
There. Okay. So yeah, I mean, everyone listening, I mean, check out and download Cake Wallet. It's legitimately the nicest wallet that I've seen in crypto. It's got cool DeFi stuff. It's got even some GPT stuff, Nano GPT.
Yeah. So it is being the 13th birthday, I guess we can, it sounds like their goal was to have MWeb live today. I'm already using it on Cakewalk because I have whatever that early access they gave out during the summit,
the beta.
That should be coming today. There's supposed to be, maybe we can speculate. What do you think the big announcement is today, supposedly from this the foundation. Do you have any guesses?
I'm taking another wallet. What? I would say it's probably another wallet or like a refined like an update to Light wallet.
You're
potentially.
You're not getting your hopes up, is that what you're saying?
Well, listen, I think it's going to be an announcement. I don't know if it's going to be a huge. I don't know what to expect. Like, frankly speaking, I think Litecoin's pretty badass the way it is. Like, what else do you expect? I don't know. Maybe a big business deal with another company. Maybe a Walmart announcement. That'd be cool.
Here's the only clues I have is that, yeah, we need a Walmart announcement. That's exactly what we need, Animal.
Another one. Yeah. One more shot.
Target. No, I think, both Indigo and Loshan have said, I've been super busy, like working hard to get something done by the 13th. It sounds like it's been like all hands on deck at the summit. But the fact those two, who I see as more in the coding world,
mm-hmm.
The tech world, maybe, and that tells me
that's true. In
the right direction.
Because I remember at some point in the Telegram chat, Loshan was asking people for MWeb Litecoin to test something out. So maybe another, I don't know, MWeb related thing. Yeah,
the coin join thing, right? Which apparently, I don't know, Indigo sent me a long thing about it. Apparently it's already live. Like, you can already coin join before you get into. Yeah, I feel bad because he sent me this long thing and I didn't read it.
Yeah, I think we should have Monte explain what that means, because I'm still confused as to how coin join would work with MWeb. Yes. Why would we need it with an MWeb wallet? But perhaps it has to do with pegging in.
May I say, like, CoinSwap is now available for Litecoin MWeb. Maybe like an in-wallet coin swap. That might be kind of cool. I'm interested because there's, in something like that, is with all the issues that, who was it? Tornado Cash developers got into. And what was the one on Bitcoin? I can't believe I'm blanking on this. The coin swap that got in trouble. They got arrested.
The Samurai?
Samurai, yeah. I would be very nervous if I were guys right now writing code about that stuff.
Yeah.
That enables that ability. But all right, let's say maybe
these guys
are
doing
something MWeb wallet related. You got any guesses, Nathan? Doubling the miner revenue?
I'm just a silly hillbilly, man. I got the contractor background, so I'm not too much of a coder, and I tend to think it's a coding thing. So I'm excited to see what they got coming out.
Some enhancements to the protocol, perhaps. Yeah, I've got another
DeFi. I think DeFi related.
DeFi,
or like Atomic Swaps. You know what might be a really cool announcement would be like a trading pair announcement, like Thor Chain's going to offer Litecoin trading pairs directly instead of just Bitcoin. That's the thing.
MWeb on Thorchain.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I mean, add some privacy to it.
I guess I was kind of hoping that it would be something to do with making MWeb more accessible, perhaps to an existing app. I don't know if it's like a API that you could use on your laptop to connect, you know, like a Coinbase to MWeb kind of thing. I don't know if that's even a real thing. And my lack of coding experience is almost surely showing to people that might say that's unfeasible, but time will tell. I'd love to see MWeb more usable for sure.
Yeah, I think it would actually, Animal, I think we're going to have Cake Wallet on soon to talk about the MWeb implementation. I feel like we do need to have like a Litecoin, like an MWeb 101 or VPM. I sat here and said I wasn't going to say MWeb anymore. VPM 101 to get, because I think there is a lot of confusion about, like, is it a separate entity? You know, there was a guy this week, he was talking about, you should be able to have both in your wallet and, you know, keep them separate. So I'm like, you can just create an MWeb wallet. Like, this isn't that complicated, but I think just the management of wallets in different environments is probably worth talking through. So maybe we'll do that with the Cake Wallet people soon. I'm trying to get that scheduled. So.
Yeah, nice walkthrough on it, and the coin control features and whatnot would be cool.
Well, maybe we should look. I feel like the foundation, when they announce it today, or maybe they'll wait till tomorrow. I will say that the one thing I like the foundation or anything, but sometimes they would make these announcements and it'd be like Friday at 6 p.m. And you're like, nobody's online Friday at 6 p.m. Make your announcements on Monday at noon or Tuesday at noon. You know, they just, you know, I get it.
They're in Australian time zone. That's it. Yep. It's like Robbie releases it Saturday morning. But it's actually
as little
Friday.
Hype as possible. Yeah. So maybe they'll wait till tomorrow. That would be the wise thing to do. Wait till like 10 a.m. Eastern or something and announce it. But anyway, we'll just leave it at that. I mean, I appreciate you coming on, Nathan. You know, I think if anything exciting happens in your world and you want to come on and mention it, or, you know, feel free to send me a DM and I'll share some of your stuff about how to get involved with Mini Mines if people are interested. It's definitely had me thinking about it. I mean, mining is this very alluring thing that you think, if I can do this right, I can make some money. I mean, you're living it, right? You've gone all in. And so I think that's really cool to have taken that chance, because it's scary to kind of jump out on an island like that. So very cool. So go check out Mini Mines. It's just miniminds.com, right? I think I copied that quickly.
Miniminds.com, or you can shoot me a DM on X or, you know, my email's on there too, on miniminds.com. So
yeah, he's overall a nice guy and he's, you know, doing his thing. So, all right, guys, I'll end it. It takes a couple seconds. Just hang around, Nathan, because they always have to catch up. I don't know what the software has to do something. So,
all right, guys. Thanks for being on. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks everybody. And honestly, this has been, I guess I should mention before I go, this has actually been 3 years I've been doing this. The Walmart story was my genesis story for Litecoin Underground. I don't know if you guys know, I was the one that uncovered the whole Turkish link. I don't know if you guys know what I'm talking about at all, on another account. And that's what kind of prompted me to get more involved, and because it had some success. But yeah, 13 years of Litecoin. I've been doing this for 3 years. And so it's been fun. Thank you for continuing to like and subscribe. These live streams have been great. YouTube's been growing. A lot more interaction on YouTube. So thanks, everybody, and have a good day.